You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en foco.
América Latina en foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
The bottom line is that you have the richest country with the largest oil reserve in the world, 300 billion barrels, more than Saudi Arabia. What kind of idiots does it take to bring it to the brink of bankruptcy?
This is Holly Sonnenland with ASCOA Online. I'm here with Russ Dallin, managing partner at Caracas Capital Markets and also the owner of the Latin American Herald Tribune. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
It's great to be with you, Holly.
So, Russ, there has been a constant stream of headlines out of Venezuela for over the last year. The country's economy is collapsing. There are severe shortages of food and medicines and just about everything else. But tensions in the country seem to have peaked in recent days. And the spark was when, on October 20th, election officials quashed the effort to recall President Nicolas Maduro. The opposition is now calling for a march on the presidential palace on November 3rd. What has been your reaction as you've watched these events unfold? Do you think this is a breaking point, or do you think it'll pass?
Well, it is an inflection point, if anything. It is a, I don't think it's a breaking point, because you have the soft power on one hand and the hard power of the government, who is armed and has both the military, the constitutional courts, and the colectivos, the gangs associated with the government, in their hands. So it's not an easy slog for the opposition to pry them away from the hands of power.
And so while all of this is brewing politically, on the economic front, the Venezuelan government and the state oil company, PDVSA, just pulled off a bond swap, right, as a couple of big payments were coming due. Do you want to give an overview of the terms?
Basically, Venezuela and PDVSA together owe $15 billion between now and the end of next year, through the end of 2017. This year alone, including this month and next month, they owe $5 billion. So they had some immediate payments coming due, and faced with that and with very little cash in the bank, they went to the bondholders and asked them to defer, help them reduce their immediate liabilities. And they succeeded in getting $2.8 billion of holders of the $7 billion that they were targeting that would be due in the short term in the next year, and persuaded them to extend out until 2020. They gave them, for every one bond they turned in, after extending it four times and improving the offer, they gave them 1.2, basically, of the new bond. So for every dollar of the old bond you had, they give you a new $1.20 of the new bond, which would pay quarterly, but most importantly, was secured by 50.1% of Citgo, which PDVSA and Venezuela own in the United States, the gasoline company that used to be in every 7-Eleven. Actually, it came out of the 7-Eleven transaction. So that was to securitize. If PDVSA defaults, which is a very real possibility and something they were warning about after the third and fourth time they extended the offer because of it wasn't being very well received, they decided to really scare bondholders by saying, well, if we don't get this, we may have to default. And that caused a lot of the rating agencies to actually mark them down. So, for example, this week, S&P, Standard & Poor's, marked down PDVSA to selective default, put them in default, and said that their 2017 bonds are considered default because it was a distressed exchange and they were forcing bondholders to try and take it.
Do you guys at your firm, do you have a probability of what you think the possibility for default might be for full default in the next year or so?
It is very high, and we're by no means out of the woods. As a matter of fact, the end result of even Venezuela getting this extension, which essentially takes $2 billion off the payments that are immediately due, but actually increases their debt by about $1 billion in the long run. And to do that, they had to give up one of the crown jewels of Venezuela, which is the Citgo franchise in the United States, which has three refineries, is worth probably $4 to $5 billion, and gives them a captive client, if you will, that they can sell their oil downstream to. So basically any oil that they have that they want to sell, they can send it to the United States, and then it can be turned into gasoline and distributed to Citgo's gasoline network all over the country. So it really is a downstream asset that most oil companies would love to have. And they had to put that into the deal to make just that $2.8 billion of bondholders of the exchange, which was about 39% of the available bondholders for that $7 billion, to make them feel comfortable enough to make that exchange. So it's we are not alone. The rating agencies are not alone in thinking that Venezuela, the probability of default is high. Fitch this week marked PDVSA down to double C, which is one notch above default. They're in a tough situation. Oil prices are not that low, and they have certainly bounced back from the lows that they had earlier in the year. But the problem is that Venezuela has been unable to capitalize on that. Their production is falling rapidly. It's down over a million to a million and a half barrels since Chavez came into office in 1998. They were producing 3.5 million barrels a day. Now they're producing between 2.1 and 2.3 million barrels a day, depending on whether you go by OPEC's count or Venezuela's count. They're not in a good place.
And obviously, as they, you know, as the government is extending these deadlines for the bond payments, their big bet is that the price of oil is going to rebound to the levels it was at before. Do you think there's a target that they're hoping for, or that you would see they would need to hit in order to not just, you know, avoid default, but maybe regain those production levels?
They're trying this. You're right. The whole basis of their strategy is to hold on for higher oil prices. It's almost in the American football equivalent of a Hail Mary pass by passing these debts down the line. And as a matter of fact, they increased the debt actually by $1 billion by doing that. Right now, the average for the year for the Venezuelan basket, now the Venezuelan basket trades about $10 below Brent and between $7 and $10 below West Texas Intermediate. The average for the whole year for Venezuela is $33.81. Now, it is higher this week. It'll be $43 a barrel is what they'll be getting, even though the, you know, West Texas and Brent were up at over 50. So Venezuela will be getting 43. But because their oil trades at a discount, because it is so heavy and requires more refining, they don't capture as much. In addition, because of their falling production, they have been unable to sell as much oil as possible. So even though they're producing, you know, a little over 2 million barrels a day, 600 to 1,000 of those barrels each day are used domestically, where gasoline is essentially a penny a gallon. So it's actually gasoline. It's cheaper than water in the country. So it literally cost me less than 25 cents to fill up my SUV in Venezuela, and most of that 25 cents actually goes to pay the tip of the guy who fills up your car. And the reason they actually make you they don't let you fill up your cars. There's no self-service stations in Venezuela, and that's because they're afraid that people would start filling up bottles and sticking a handkerchief in them and making Molotov cocktails and throwing them at the government that has destroyed their country. So you're not allowed to actually handle your own gas. So 600,000 barrels a day of that 2.1 million barrels a day that they produce are used domestically and at a loss because they actually sell them for a penny, and it actually costs much more than that to produce a gallon of gasoline. And then another 600,000 barrels a day go free to China because China's already paid. They loaned Venezuela $65 billion, and Venezuela has to export oil to them to pay that loan back. So basically, they're left with about a million barrels a day that they can sell for cash, the majority of which come to the United States, but some go elsewhere, India and Cuba and some other places like that. But basically, a million barrels a day at the average for the year has been 3381. It'll be, let's just round it up to 35 for the average for the year. That's $35 million a day. In a country of 30 million people, that's less than a dollar and a quarter per person. Mm-hmm. It's not enough to feed your population, much less pay for everything that has to be paid for, the drugs, the medicines, the whole infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're in the straits that they're in.
So speaking of billions of dollars, the U.S. Department of Justice, with the help of Swiss officials, is apparently on the verge of seizing about $11 billion in funds from accounts held by Venezuelan officials and their associates that they have allegedly siphoned from PDVSA. And this is apparently just a sliver of the total monies they have taken. Can you give an overview of what is happening here and how much money is at stake?
So there's a couple of different strands and ways to look at it. The National Assembly Finance Committee, run by Deputy Jose Guerra, did an audit over the last couple of weeks and had hearings. And basically, they determined that there's at least $11 billion in the PDVSA money that was stolen, that can't be accounted for. Now, there's much, much more than that. But just $11 billion that's disappeared. There's tons more that's double billing, and, you know, something costs a dollar and they charge you $5 for it, and, you know, and then you split it and everybody goes home happy and buys a beautiful house, you know, in Texas, which is indeed what happened recently. Two Venezuelan-American gentlemen were convicted. Pled guilty, actually switched their plea to guilty, in over $1 billion worth of transactions with PDVSA. And they were bribing PDVSA officials to do the business with them, gave them houses, trips to Disney World, cars and taxis and all that kind of thing, because it was quite lucrative. Those two have pled guilty, are probably singing to try and get their sentences reduced. And as a result, it's causing a kind of a waterfall effect in that they're finding other people in on the scams and ripping off all of this money that PDVSA had produced, especially when the Venezuelan oil basket reached a high in July of 2008 of $126 a barrel. So that was there was billions and billions and billions of dollars that flowed through PDVSA's coffers and are nowhere to be found. The worst thing about all of this is that all of that wealth from this huge oil boom, billions and trillions of dollars, trillions, literally trillions, and they left nothing. There's no great projects. There's no great highways. There's no great buildings. Nothing. Nothing left.
So in the event U.S. authorities are able to seize the assets and seize this $11 billion, would that get reappropriated? And who would it get reappropriated to, the Maduro government or another body?
So I think the U.S. government right now will hold it. Eventually, it'll be returned to Venezuela, although politics between the U.S. and Venezuela being what they are, there may be a long delay until perhaps there's a change of government. But in the end, the United States does always return the money to people, whether it be Iran, as also been in the press, or even there was a painting stolen from Venezuela in kind of their version of the Thomas Crown Affair, because it was replaced with something like my 7-year-old son might have done. It was a Matisse, and they they caught them in the United States. It was a Cuban and a Mexican were arrested and jailed. But they were trying to fence it in the United States about 10 years later. That painting has now been returned to the beautiful Sophie Imber Modern Museum in downtown Caracas. So the U.S. is pretty good about returning those kind of things.
So I have one last question here as we wrap up. The financial markets obviously favor stability, political stability, institutional stability, and although still the Maduro administration holds many more cards in its hand to hold on to power right now, the consensus seems to be that Maduro won't finish out his term at the very least if something doesn't happen sooner. In the event of a regime change, how do you think the markets would respond in general? I mean, do you think there might be some forgiveness and leniency given the tension right now, or do you still think that could prompt a financial event?
I suspect it'll be a financial event. Of course, it depends on what kind of regime change there is. I mean, there's several different options on the table. You know, and that's the amazing thing about Venezuela is that, and as you noted earlier, that there's a new headline every hour practically coming out of Venezuela because you have this financial crisis that's building and building. You have this political crisis that's building and building and building. And in a sense, they're running on parallel tracks, squeezing the government in. But those events have happened in other Latin American countries, and namely the best example in this area for us is Cuba. And Cuba and the Castros are still in power. So that is what the Venezuelans are struggling and fighting against in a nonviolent way so far. And ultimately, it's going to be a test, like so many other things that Venezuela is showing us. It's going to be a test of whether nonviolent population, with 80% of the population wants a change of government, is able to achieve that without armed insurrection. So it's a real it's not easy because it's not. It's not a fragile democracy where losing votes means falling out of power. You're dealing with a government that, with the officers who are modeled and taught and coached by Cuba, and that makes it a little bit more more difficult when you analyze that scenario. So, to more specifically answer your question, it depends if there's a right-wing coup. There could be a coup from what they call the right wing, or from the from the opposition. There could be a coup from the left wing, which is essentially what we're seeing in terms of Maduro and his team and people canceling any chance for a recall referendum, taking away parliament's votes, jailing political opponents, and even stopping the governor elections and postponing them until some date unknown when they were supposed to happen this year in the next 2 months. So there has been already a coup by the Maduro government, just not in name alone. It's been a kind of silent, creeping coup, but it's achieved all of the things that we would see. The problem is the opposition is trying to fight that with legal methods, and the government gets to interpret what is a legal method.
Yes, the deck and just about everything else is stacked against them.
So. Yeah, it's an uphill battle. Gandhi tactics have not worked against the Castros, so by the same token, they haven't worked in Venezuela either.
Yeah, a lot remains to be seen, and we are looking forward to the day of this march in the presidential palace. That evening, we'll be hosting you, along with other experts, to talk about Venezuela, PDVSA, the bonds, and the situation. So we're very much looking forward to that.
As am I, Holly.
Thanks for listening. For more, visit as-coa.org.